This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehayas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
EVs does not have internal combustion engine. It means no oil, no plugs, no filters to be regularly changed.
That was Shizo Thompson of Malawi Sky Energy Africa startup on the benefits of electric cars. Details coming up also. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is back in Israel. These stories and more on African News Tonight. Ever since the October 7th attack by Hamas on Israel and Israel's deadly retaliatory airstrikes, and now a ground assault, there have been concerns the conflict could ignite fighting on different fronts. Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah militant group have repeatedly traded fire along the border. Tensions escalated further ahead of a speech today by Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, his first public comment since the Hamas attack. And as you just, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken also today met with Israel's Prime Minister today to press American calls for a humanitarian pause in the fighting. Our reporter, Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem, briefed us a few hours ago on Nasrallah's speech and Blinken's visit.
Secretary Blinken, first of all, repeated, the United States' strong support for Israel. He said that he wants to make sure that the October 7th onslaught of Hamas that killed 1,400 Israelis doesn't repeat itself, but also to build what he called a different future, a strategy that creates what he called a better tomorrow for both peoples and the region. And what he seemed to be hinting at by his those remarks at the beginning were that Israel has to start thinking about what's going to happen in Gaza, you know, if and when Hamas is defeated.
Ever since the October 7th assault, Linda, there have been concerns the conflict could ignite fighting on other fronts, and Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah militant group have repeatedly traded fire along the border. So tensions today almost kind of escalated further ahead of a speech by Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. And those would be his first public comments, I guess, since the Hamas attack. So, Linda, you have been monitoring Nasrallah's speech. Could you talk to us about that?
Yes. So it was his first speech, as you said. It was quite long. It went on for well over an hour. He tends to give these very long speeches, and there were hundreds of thousands of Hezbollah supporters listening to that speech. And I have to say, it was somewhat of a strange speech, mostly because he said that all of the Israeli civilians who were massacred on October 7th were not killed by Hamas, but were killed by Israeli forces, which is just kind of a ridiculous claim. He also said he also called Israel a weak state. He justified attacks on American troops, but he did not say that Hezbollah is opening up a second front against Israel. About 30 Hezbollah gunmen have been killed by Israel. One Israeli soldier has been killed in this sort of fighting across the border. But at least so far, it appears that Hezbollah is stopping short of a full war with Israel, that he doesn't want it, the Lebanese people don't want it. And again, that could always change. But at least right now, there's a lot of tension, but it's not yet a full-scale war with Hezbollah.
And Linda, sure. Could you summarize this, the week for us in Gaza as well as in Israel?
Well, in Gaza, Israeli troops entered Gaza and pressed deep into Gaza City. And that was backed by very intense air bombardment. There are still about 300 Palestinian civilians in northern Gaza, despite Israeli warnings to flee. And some of them did flee, today on Friday. The Palestinian Health Ministry, which is affiliated with Hamas, says that over 9,000 Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of the Israeli response to the Hamas assault on Israel, which killed about 1,400 Israelis. In the fighting in Gaza, at least 24 Israeli soldiers, have been killed. Israel also says it's not sure about the Hamas figures, and that Hamas is including gunmen who were killed. Hamas says, by the way, that 57 of the 140 hostages, Israeli hostages being held in Gaza, have been killed in Israeli airstrikes. Israel has no way to independently confirm that. So there's heavy fighting going on in Gaza. In Israel, the families of the hostages have really kind of stepped up their campaign for the hostages to be overlooked and not to be forgotten about. Today met with some former head of the Israeli Supreme Court, and they're going to present a case to the International Criminal Court saying that Hamas is guilty of war crimes. The Saturday, by the way, marks 4 weeks since the Hamas assault on Israel and then the Israeli response. So, you know, for more than a month, there's been very heavy fighting, and there really right now doesn't seem to be any sign of it ending.
That was Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem, who spoke a short time ago. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken held talks with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu behind closed doors today before starting wider discussions with the leader and his war cabinet. Before Blinken even departed, the U.S. State Department reiterated American support for Israel's right to defend itself. State Department correspondent Cindy Sain is standing by to brief us on the matter. So, Cindy, how was the Secretary's day in Israel today?
Well, probably intense might be a good word. He had meetings, as you said, behind closed doors with the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, and then the two of them went into longer meetings with the entire Israeli war cabinet. And Secretary Blinken came out for also meetings with the Israeli President Herzog, and then went back in again to the war cabinet meetings. And we know that Secretary Blinken had said when he was departing and when he landed that he was going to call for some what they're calling humanitarian pauses, not a ceasefire, not a full-blown ceasefire, but just short, brief pauses to both, as Blinken said, to try to get more humanitarian aid into Gaza, to do some sort of, as he was going to say, concrete measures to protect civilians in Gaza, and also, he said, to facilitate getting some of the estimated 240 hostages freed.
So Blinken was expected, and apparently he did it, to stress the importance of protecting civilians and push for more aid amid growing alarm over the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. So did he do that?
He did do that, but I'm not sure, to be honest, how successful that was, because in a bit of an unusual move, while he was still on the ground and meeting with other Israeli leaders, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu came out and gave a televised address saying that there will not be any temporary ceasefire in Gaza until Hamas frees all of the hostages, basically rejecting what Blinken was calling for and saying all the hostages need to be released first.
And another story was Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Blinken is also expected to press Israel to rein in violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank committed by, you know, Jewish settlers over there.
Yes, you're right. Blinken and the State Department have condemned the settler violence. And there wasn't too much publicly about that today, but I'm sure that was also a topic that was behind, closed doors. And Secretary Blinken has now arrived in Jordan, where he'll be holding talks Saturday. And all of these issues, the fate of the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, I'm sure will be top of the agenda there in Jordan.
And lastly, Cindy, Israel and the U.S. seem to have really right now no clear plan for what would come next if Hamas rule in Gaza is brought down. Was that one of the key questions on Blinken's agenda?
He did mention that, and I'm sure that there were talks about, as people would say, the day after. And Secretary Blinken said again that there needs to be a return to this two-state solution, that for there to be any kind of lasting peace, Palestinians need to be able to also live in security and safety and dignity. And he called again for a two-state solution.
State Department correspondent Cindy Sain, thank you for your input.
My pleasure.
United Nations human rights official reported today that an increasing number of women and girls have been kidnapped and sexually assaulted by men affiliated with the paramilitary rapid support forces in Sudan's volatile Darfur region. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office says it has been receiving deeply alarming reports of the abduction and rape of Sudanese women and girls in areas controlled by the rapid support forces in Darfur. Human rights spokesperson Liz Throssell says the women and girls reportedly are being held in inhumane, degrading, slave-like conditions where they allegedly are forcibly married and held for ransom.
Credible information from survivors, witnesses, and other sources suggests more than 20 women and girls have been taken, but the numbers could be higher. Some sources have reported seeing women and girls in chains on pickup trucks and in cars.
Throssell says this shocking situation is most likely much worse than the numbers indicate. She notes the cases of conflict-related sexual violence are never fully reported because of the shame attached to these violations. She says reports of gender-based violence began surfacing soon after fighting erupted between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary RSF on April 15th. She says initial allegations arose in the Khartoum area, which has been largely under RSF control.
One of the reports indicated that women and girls had been abducted and detained at a location in the city's Al-Riyad district from as early as the 24th of April. Since then, we have continued to receive reports of abductions, with an increasing number of cases being reported in the Darfur region, particularly North, Central and South Darfur, and in the Kordofan region.
Since the start of the conflict, the Joint Human Rights Office in Sudan has documented at least 105 people who have been subjected to sexual violence, including 23 rapes, 26 gang rapes, and 3 attempted rapes. UN rights officials are calling for the prompt release of the abducted women and girls, for all alleged cases of sexual violence to be investigated, and for perpetrators of these crimes to be brought to justice. The RSF and the Sudanese army have both denied allegations of human rights abuses against civilians while accusing each other of committing rights violations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Drivers in Malawi are getting an opportunity to purchase electric vehicles through a local startup company. The handful of buyers so far say they no longer have to struggle daily to get fuel at pump stations. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The startup Sky Energy Africa introduced electric vehicles, or EVs, to the streets of Blantyre in September. Company founder and managing director Shizo Thompson says the EVs will help motorists in Malawi save money normally spent on maintenance and fuel.
EVs does not have internal combustion engine. It means no oil, no plugs, no filters to be regularly changed. So these maintenance costs add up to a certain amount. So by cutting those, you are saving.
The vehicles are showing up on the roads of Malawi's second biggest city, Blantyre. Thompson says the demand has outstripped expectations.
The first 30 days after the launch, we have received over 1,000 inquiries on the EV, and in the same space, we have managed to complete over 10 orders of the EV. This means a positive development and a fertile environment for the EVs. And business model.
Thompson says the demand is partly because the Malawi government removed the import duty on zero-emission vehicles which resulted in lower prices for consumers. Some mechanics in Malawi have reservations about EVs. However, Boni Betani is an automotive electrician who owns a garage in Blanta.
We have welcomed those cars, but not 100% fully. There is a lot of challenges which we can face concerning these electric motor vehicles. For instance, how are we going to service these cars? Because we need to be trained as well.
But Thompson says electric vehicles are easier to service for mechanics who can handle routine maintenance, like changing brake pads, tires, and shock absorbers.
And when it comes to the battery pack, the energy storage system, the battery management systems, as well as the inverter and the motor, these are a special segment of our field, so it will be done by us.
Thompson says plans are underway to train more technicians across the country in EV technology. Meanwhile, EV owners appreciate escaping long lines for fuel at the pump stations. Enea Zalilo is an entrepreneur in Malawi who has just purchased an electric car.
When you follow technology, the world is on here. I can easily plan when to go or where to go, because I don't need to go at the filling station to fuel my car.
For now, Zalilo and others are charging their cars at home, as Malawi has no charging stations yet. But Thompson says he's working with pump station and shopping mall operators to install industrial chargers across the country. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Chad's opposition hopes for renewed political stability after Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi and Chad's Transitional Military Council negotiated the return from exile of pro-democracy leader Success Masara. But the council has yet to withdraw an international arrest warrant for Masara. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Abderrahmane Koulamallah, Chad's Minister of National Reconciliation, says opposition leader Success Masara, who fled to the United States 2 years ago because of political tensions, may return to the capital N'Djamena in the days or weeks ahead. Chad's military government says that on Tuesday, Masara's return was agreed on after negotiations led by Congo President Felix Tshisekedi. Tshisekedi was negotiating for Chad's exiled opposition leaders and civil society activists to go home without fear of arrest. Koulamallah spoke on Chad's state TV on Thursday.
Nous plaiderons auprès des autorités compétentes, des autorités judiciaires, pour qu'il puisse exercer.
He says he asked in his capacity as Minister of Reconciliation that Mahamat Idriss Déby, who heads the Transitional Military Council, order the withdrawal of an international arrest warrant used for Masara by the state prosecutor based in the capital. Koulamallah says Chad is facing lots of political crises, civil strife and armed conflicts, which will ease if exiled opposition leaders return.
Nous ne voulons pas que ça recommence. Il est temps de rassembler les Tchadiens et de les rassembler tous.
The 11-member Economic Community of Central African States, or SEAC, appointed Tshisekedi to serve as a facilitator for Chad's political transition process in October 2022 after a military crackdown on civilians who protested against Déby. Chad's opposition and civil society groups say security forces killed 50 people, injured 300, and arrested several hundred during pro-democracy protests against what opposition and civil society groups saw as a sign of the military junta's refusal to hand power to civilians. After the protest, Masara fled Chad through neighboring Cameroon. An arrest warrant for Masara was signed on June 8, 2023, but was never made public. It accuses Masara of an attempted attack on constitutional order, incitement to hatred, and an insurrection. Masara says he is ready to return to Chad, but does not say when.
C'est le sentiment, allez, de continuer à faire avancer mon pays, à faire avancer notre peuple sur le chemin de la démocratie.
Masra says he believes that by agreeing to allow his return from exile, the military government is showing good faith to stop silencing church opposition. He says he will foster democracy, reconciliation, justice and equality. Masra said he hopes the arrest warrant will be withdrawn soon. Church opposition and civil society activists hope the return of at least 24 exiled opposition leaders and civil society activists will calm angry citizens who have been on the streets every week. Masra is the president of the Transformers Party, said to be one of the most popular political parties in Chad. Kulamala says when Masra and other exiled political figures and civil society members return, they should respect laws or they may run into problems with justice ministry officials. Debi became head of an 18-month transitional council on April 21, 2021, following the death of his 68-year-old father from injuries suffered while visiting troops fighting rebels in the north of the country. The late Idris Debi Idnu had led Chad's government for 3 decades. His son was supposed to hand power to a civilian government in October 2022, but instead extended the transition period by 2 years. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Rwanda says it will allow all Africans to travel visa-free to the country. President Paul Kagame made the announcement yesterday and highlighted the potential of Africa as a unified tourism destination for a continent which still relies on 60% of its tourists from other parts of the world. Other countries that allow Africans to enter without visas are Gambia, Benin, and Seychelles. Kenya's President William Ruto announced Monday plans to allow all Africans to travel to the East African nation visa-free by December 31st. He said, "It's a net loss for Africa when business people, entrepreneurs, and others cannot travel easily." The African Union in 2016 launched an African passport, saying it would rival the European Union model in unleashing the potential of the continent. However, only diplomats and AU officials have been issued the travel documents so far. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.